Welcome to the program for Friday, October 26th on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Frankenstorm edition of the Federal News Countdown. And my guests in the studio for the program today already rolling their eyes, and I have to confess, I'm right along with them. Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Services here. It's good to see you, my friend.
Always good to see you.
And Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. It's great to have you back in the studio. Welcome. This cool. is your first time since the birth of your son or daughter.
Son, another son.
Congratulations
so, thank
on
you.
That.
Thank you, and exciting to be here on the Frankenstorm edition.
Yeah, and you don't look exhausted, which is really surprising.
Caffeine.
That explains it. Tim and I are a little bit beyond the six-month-old days, but we certainly sympathize with you on that, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here. I mentioned the storm, and I have to confess I'm a bit of a cynic about that. I'm just not quite sure what to expect, because it seems like every once in a while these things come up, and they're supposed to be a big deal, and then we realize it never really happened. So I'm not saying that that's not what's going to happen here, because I don't want to be the guy 3 days from now when people's houses are blown away who say, hey, you told us there wasn't going to be any. So I don't know, but...
Pointing the fingers at you, but see, put it out there. I'm a cynic too, a little bit.
Are you?
Well, you know.
So I said before I left the office, I said it wasn't happening. So
yeah.
Clearly it will happen.
So you've now jinxed it, and we're going to have some kind of a horrible disaster. Well, at any rate, you've each chosen what you think are the three most important federal news stories of the week. We've got them posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we start counting them down with
number three.
Jenny Mattingly, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the Fed Times. The headline is Army to have electronic personnel records in a year. I guess the only skepticism, speaking of skeptics, that people have is that agencies, I'm not picking on the Army, but agencies in general have struggled to hit some of these deadlines for electronic records issues in the past.
Right. Well, and I think also putting things on electronic records in general. I mean, we've had a lot of talk about retirement backlogs, about folks, you know, some of the complications if folks have been in service for a long time, where are their records, everything's on paper. And so this stood out because there at least there's focus on it. I mean, year time, it's not this is happening right now, but at least it's a huge, huge agency, huge division that's looking at putting that on there. It was kind of in the story. It talked about, you know, there was a fire someplace and it could have been 30,000 to 40,000 personnel folders. That's a huge amount of people. We're talking about just all your service records gone.
Yeah. I had a conversation with somebody who's on doing a digitization initiative for records in mm-hmm. government. I won't say who it was or the agency, but this person said the problem that we still have is people think digitization is just scanning something and making it a PDF, and that's the end of
right.
it.
Right. Well, but and when you think about it, and that's, I think, why people talk about why can't the government do this? Why aren't they faster on this? You've got to contract. You've got to build an entire system. You've got to figure out some of my, I guess, skepticism on this or hope in some ways is that all these systems are going to be similar, talking together, working together as people move around.
One would hope.
You know, so that's a little bit of my hope. But I do think, you know, in all fairness to these agencies and the folks doing this, it's a lot more complicated than you might look at and think.
The third most important federal news story of the week from Jenny Mattingly is from the Federal Times. The headline, Army to have electronic personnel records in a year. Tim McManus, your third most important story is from the Washington Post. The headline is agencies told to keep doors open to interns. And my first reaction when I read the story, this is about the Pathways program that you and I have talked about a number of times, is everything that we've seen about Pathways is this is going to happen and you're going to do this almost to the degree of whether you like it or not. Is that the impression that you get when you see how all these various things are being decided?
So I think that's a little bit true. The interesting thing with this story, I think, is number one, and nobody really ought to lose any sleep over this story at all, because ultimately it doesn't change anything from the way that agencies currently use third-party interns. So basically what OPM did is said, look, there's a lot of confusion about whether or not you can use third-party interns. You can't use third-party interns. We just need to set the record straight. So kudos to OPM for getting out and finally clarifying that. I think, again, the issue here for agencies, continue to use third-party interns. For those who have opposed some of the other pieces of the Pathways programs, you know what? Don't lose sleep over this. This is what they're doing right now with third-party interns.
What's the big holdup on Pathways aside from the interns issue?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, and I think this is a great example just at government at work in general, is you can have a greatly written policy, and people can debate whether or not the regulations, whether or not Pathways regulations were really well written or not. But it all comes down to the execution of things. And that's really what the holdup is at this point, is agencies are really trying to figure out, how do we execute on this now? And in some cases, it's because they've simply done things the same way, same way. So again, as it relates to this story, continue to do things same way, same way.
Are they trying to figure it out, though, genuinely, or are they soft-pedaling a little bit?
So I think clearly, given some of the hiring constraints that a lot of agencies have as well, they're maybe soft-pedaling a little bit, saying, you know what, there's no urgency necessarily for us to get ourselves over the hump, because we're not going to hire immediately either. One other thing I have to add about the story, and I think this is so often true, sorry, Francis, about a lot of news stories, but this kind of only tells half the picture. So if you read the story, you say, oh, well, great, third-party interns can be converted, everything else. Some of those who are not in favor of conversion of interns are maybe up in arms about this. If you actually read the memo from OPM, yes, they can be converted, but only 320 of their hours count for conversion. In order to be converted from an intern to full-time service, you need 640 hours. So only a portion of their time. So you still are going to have to either convert them into some other type of internship program or bring them in through a recent grad program. So again, you're not skirting the competitive hiring system with this at all.
Tim McManus's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is, agencies told to keep doors open to interns. It's posted along with all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll continue the countdown with the second most important story from Tim McManus and from Jenny Mattingly when the countdown continues in just a moment.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's a company-wide commitment by ITT Excels to support our nation's active-duty military, returning service members, veterans, and their families. That's why Excels is launching the Excels Action Corps, an employee volunteer program to serve those who have served us so bravely. Visit ExcelsActionCorps.com to learn more and join Excels employees in your community as volunteers. That's ExcelsActionCorps.com.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International.
Dr. Carolyn Clancy, director of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, talks about the value of research.
We don't pay for care. We don't provide it or regulate it. But through partnerships with entities that do, we can make sure that they've got the best possible information to inform their decisions.
Agency of the Month, Wednesdays at 11 in October on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cancer claims more than 570,000 lives each year and costs more than $102 billion in care expenses alone. ICF International plays a role in every aspect of cancer data collection and dissemination, helping clients track this deadly disease across the country. They provide researchers, including those working at the National Institutes of Health, with information they need to better fight cancer or prevent it altogether. Find out how their public health work improves the quality of life at ICFI.com.
For a faster, easier way for your agency to go green, choose GSA's Green Aisles, the custom online purchasing channels on GSA Advantage and GSA Global Supply. Each item in the Green Aisles is identified and labeled with environmental indicators like Energy Star, EPEAT, and more, so you can find the green products and services you need and meet all of your agency's sustainability requirements, environmental and economic. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. We'll be broadcasting live from the Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg. Hear VA CIO Roger Baker on 4 years of reform and Walt Harris, the Chief Operating Officer at the FDA, on changing the work of leadership. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week it's Jenny Mattingly, the Director of Government Affairs at Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and Tim McManus, Vice President for Education and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. We're up to
number two.
And Jenny, your second most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is, Obama says he's confident a grand bargain can be reached. And the story leads off by saying President Obama is doubling down on optimism that he and Congress will be able to quickly handle the nation's vexing fiscal problems. The doubling down is a reference to what he said during the last presidential debate, where he pretty much said sequestration is not going to happen.
And he said that a couple of times.
As though it was only up to him and nobody else, but that's beside the point. That if this is actually the case, this is good news. But there are still so many variables and unknowns here, it seems.
And I'm going to laugh because I'm going to reference, Tim's story, because it's also on sequestration about nobody knows what they're going to do. So we've got the president saying it's not going to happen. Neither party has offered any sort of path into saying this is exactly what's going to happen. And then each side's being hit because, there is no agency saying. I think right now I saw something today. The party line of agencies is, well, talk to OMB. If they get any questions about it. So, and I get that because in one extent, you don't want to, cause any sort of fear or terror about what's getting cut, who might be cut, all that. So I get it, but it's complicated. I don't know if they're going to be able to, personally, my own personal opinions, I don't know what they're going to be able to do in the lame duck because there's been such a great distance. And so even though they're saying it's not going to happen, I that's part of the rhetoric trying to frame all of this, but whether it will or not, I don't know.
And I have a hard time understanding the prioritization because, sure, sequestration is really difficult. It's really potentially ugly and so on. But there's a lot of other business out there. Secretary Panetta, my colleague Jared Serbu, covered Secretary Panetta's remarks where he's essentially got a laundry list that is months and months and months and months of work that he says should get done during the lame duck session. And I'm thinking it can be 3 weeks at the most, I would think, because they're certainly not going to hang around too close to Christmas.
They talk December 8th, but it usually goes past whatever they're talking about. But at the same time, you've also got authorization bills. We haven't seen a defense authorization go through. We haven't seen, really much of anything go through. So there are quite a few issues floating around. And this is one of, clearly one of the larger issues they've got to face. But it also depends on who wins the election, too. Who wins? Who keeps the Senate, who keeps the House, that's going to change the strategy, which is why I think they aren't really talking strategy because it, all up in the air for another
too many moving parts to try to predict it. As Jenny alluded, Tim, your second most important federal news story of the week is on the same subjects. You chose the Washington Post story. Obama and Romney offer no clear path on sequestration. And it looks from this story like it's the same kinds of reasons that Jenny just outlined.
I think either Jenny and I could have picked any story right now on sequestration and we would have kind of come to the
it's
same
pretty
conclusion,
much the same
which
ideas.
Is,
yeah.
Which is, some of this is much of it is not in either President Obama's hands or Mitt Romney's hands if he's to be elected. It really is dependent upon Congress. So they can, Obama could say that he's doubling down and it's not going to happen, but some of that's not in his control. If you look at the two candidates, the one candidate that probably does have a little bit of an upper hand in this conversation is actually Obama, because regardless of a lame duck Congress or not, he's still going to be in office. He's in office until, January. So He probably does have a little bit of an upper hand in this, but again, he's not going to control it. And again, I think the interesting thing with both of the candidates at this point, whether or not they've said it's not going to happen or we don't know yet, is neither have offered any type of path forward. And that's really, you know, why I chose this one, is that there isn't any clear path forward. And again, during the lame duck, there are a lot of different issues. Jenny, you rattled off a bunch of them. The one that you forgot that I think is also pressing on a lot of people's minds is the whole Bush tax cut issue as well, which comes into play, particularly as you start talking about sequestration as well.
And that's what John McHugh says, the Secretary of the Army, in your story, Tim. Mr. McHugh saying at the AUSA convention on Monday, we can't make absolute determinations, referencing how they're preparing for sequestration, because there's still a lot of things at play. And, I mean, if the Secretary of the Army is saying we don't know enough yet to really be able to make solid plans, that's good enough for me that it, all the way up to the very tops of these agencies, nobody really knows what to expect.
What's interesting about this story and kind of a parallel track, Francis, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about whether or not there was going to be a government shutdown last year. You know, when I was on the show at one point last year, it was, you know, just before that pumpkin turning time.
Yes.
And we said kind of the same thing. You know, nobody knows until they know. There's no clear way out of this. There's no this is a whole lot bigger.
The
consequences here are a whole lot bigger than, you know, what we were talking about before.
My fear in all of the scenarios that I've seen is, it seems to me that politically, the beginning of the lame duck session, or the beginning of 2013, and I mean the very beginning, January, is really the optimum time to try to do something about this. Because if this stretches, the scenarios that I've heard, Congressman Van Hollen was on the program about a week and a half ago. He was the first person that I heard say, well, maybe we can do some kind of short-term solution. He didn't say deal, but that's what he implied. That's what, right, I took him to mean. You know, a month, 2 months, 3 months. Then you're starting to get into the middle of 2013. Then that leaves it very easy for them to push it to the end of 2013. Well, we'll do another 6 months, as we've seen with continuing resolutions for the past however long. This is my fear, that we get into the 2013-2014 election season, and then we're right back where we started with push it off, push it off,
although
push it off.
Although it's not a presidential election season, so that takes it down a little bit.
No, but everybody still, in the House is up,
right,
again, and another third of the Senate.
And I've heard, you know, to be honest, I've heard a lot of things where people, you know, the backroom talk here, or the parlor game, if you want to call it that, is, are they actually going to deal with sequestration, or are they going to kick the can down the road? And a lot of folks I've talked to are betting that Congress will kick the can down the road until March, until they get settled again and take it up. And you've also got the CR extending, you know, till that time too. So are they going to look at it as one big package where they kind of take care of everything?
One big mess.
Well, right.
It is.
You know, or are they actually going to do something? And I, you know, I've heard a lot of folks say they think it won't happen until next year.
All right. Contrarian view then. Can we maybe be encouraged by the fact that this topic is being addressed in the general media as much as it is? Because this is something, I mean, it's one thing for us to talk about it, because this is the kind of thing that we deal with and the kind of things that the people we care about deal with every single day. But it's starting to show up in the presidential debates. It's starting to show up in broader conversations. You know, my parents in Pennsylvania, who don't follow what goes on inside the Beltway in a literal or a figurative sense, know about it and understand what the problems are. And so I wonder if maybe that's not a good thing, where before, members of Congress didn't think that they would feel any pressure from the people that they're trying to get votes from, and now maybe they do.
So I would hope that a little bit of that's at play. I don't know that I'd be quite as optimistic as you might be, Francis, but I hope that a little bit that's at play, because if you look at last spring when folks really first started talking about sequestration, nobody, even those folks that, the three of us, well, you excluded, of course, Francis.
But I'm a geek, so I was thinking about it.
But even folks
then,
here,
yes,
in D.C., you know, when the word sequestration was thrown out, everybody immediately ran for the dictionary or you know, pulled the word up online to figure out what the heck that meant. So I think even us, internal, didn't understand that. So I think now that, we've clearly developed a better understanding, people outside of the Beltway developing some level of understanding. The only way I think a lot of this changes is if folks see the impact day to day. So what does this really mean for me? So even if your parents who are outside the Beltway have somewhat of an understanding, are they really invested in this? If they don't understand how that's going to impact them day to day, when they hit that point, I think then you will see some traction.
Well, and that's the problem all the time is people don't understand. There's this idea that we don't like the federal government or it's too big or it's this. But when you start asking them, what do you think about your postman? What do you think about, the person who helps you at the VA or the person, they say, well, I like that person. I don't want them to get cut.
Same as Congress.
Yeah.
I don't like Congress, but I like my person.
Right.
I have another kind of fear, I guess. It's not quite that bad, but I want to mention that to you and get your thoughts on that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. On the Federal News Countdown, the second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Jenny Mattingly. Obama says he's confident a grand bargain can be reached. That's the GovExec story. Tim McManus's choice is also on sequestration from the Washington Post. Obama and Romney offer no clear path on sequestration. We'll continue the conversation in a minute on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Paul Pagnotto of the Pagnotto Carp Group of Hightower Advisors. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to get in touch with us, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's neither one, but a hero just the same. It's a federal worker giving to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities. She pulls someone out of harm's way with every payroll contribution. He champions the people in his community with every CFC charity he designates. When you choose CFC code 31408 and give through payroll contributions, you're changing the life of someone in need. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
The March of Dimes and AFSEA Nova will honor women in the technology industry who are making a difference in their communities at the 12th annual Heroines in Technology Gala, November 9th. From CEOs to entrepreneurs, these women exemplify leadership and volunteerism in their community. Proceeds from this Black Tie Awards program will benefit the March of Dimes and its fight to prevent birth defects, premature birth, and infant mortality. To learn more, visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Flu shots for safer pregnancies. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Pregnant women have special risks in flu season. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Denise Jameson says influenza can increase the risk of miscarriage and increase the risk that the baby may be born too soon or too small. And she says pregnant women have their own risks if they get sick.
Once they do get the flu, they're more likely to have severe complications, including hospitalization and death.
So Jameson advises pregnant women to get flu vaccination. She says the vaccination is safe for the mother and the unborn child, and decades of experience back that up. She says women can be vaccinated at any time in the pregnancy, and the best time to get vaccinated is the soonest the vaccine is available in the woman's area. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight is the Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund, known as FEA. It's the only charity by and for federal employees and their families, providing scholarships and emergency financial help every day. It's feds helping feds keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Join FEA and feds helping feds. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight charities are fed by Papa John's.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's on the Federal News Countdown, it's Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth and Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service. And you have both chosen as your second most important federal news stories of the week, stories about sequestration. Tim, your choice is from the Washington Post. The headline is Obama and Romney offer no clear path on sequestration. Jenny, you have the GovExec story. Obama says he's confident a grand bargain can be reached. I mentioned before the break that there's another thing. It's not a fear exactly, but it is in the back of my mind. And it goes to the perception that people that don't do this every day and don't work with the federal government every day have about the federal government. I've been hearing now a couple of things from CFOs at agencies. One of them is sequestration isn't something that people, the average person, will notice immediately. So my thought is, what happens if January 2nd comes, there's no solution? January 3rd comes, still no solution, on and on and on. January 15th rolls around, or whenever it is, I think that's when my parents, for example, get their Social Security payments. And they get their payments on time, and the mail continues to be delivered, technically not affected by sequestration, but still something that a lot of people perceive that the federal government does. Veterans hospitals continue to be open, and so on and so forth. And what happens if a lot of people who are now looking at this possibility and trying to understand what it really means say, oh, the federal government seems to be getting along just fine without this 10% or whatever it is that winds up being cut? Maybe it gets all of this pressure that we're expecting to hear from those constituents doesn't come, and people's mindset changes. Is that possible, do you think, Jenny?
I think it is possible. I mean, in some ways, I because things do take a while as people have to figure out if we don't get a deal or and if we do go off the fiscal cliff, as people are calling it, you know, it's going to take a while for people to actually figure out what that means to each agency, since we're talking about they don't have a plan right now. So then once it's clear they need a plan, what is that? It's kind of almost like the rolling blackouts that you used to hear. You know, all of a sudden a group of people are going to go, the lights are off, what's going on?
Right.
And they'll hear from those people. So you might have pressure pockets around. I don't know that this terminology of the cliff, I tend to think that might be accurate as more of rolling down the hill versus this cliff that we're going up. But that doesn't mean that long term the effects aren't going to be really challenging and terrible, and some people will really be affected by it.
And I want to be clear, I'm not proposing that that's the case, right, that this won't be a big deal. I'm just proposing the possibility that that's the perception, because it won't be the cliff sensation that people thought that they were going to get, because that's what some of my colleagues in the media and some people in Congress and two presidential candidates have been talking about.
No, I think that's exactly right. And again, to Jenny's point, I think in a lot of cases, the general public may see it in rolling phases, and some of them may not see much at all. And again, I think that's part of the challenge that we face in general with the federal government, which is until you can connect that back to the everyday life of Americans, they have a hard time saying, leading on to one of the next stories about pay. Are they overpaid? Are they underpaid? You know, and when the average American sees some type of impact of service as a result of an underpaid federal employee or no federal employee in place, then they're going to holler. Until then, all's okay.
Because I see two things potentially converging there, two old saws. Perception is reality, and you never get a second chance to make a first impression. If people's first impression of sequestration is, well, this isn't really that bad, then the perception, I think, becomes, well, maybe the government can afford this, at least among enough people that there are then members of Congress who go, well, yeah, maybe this isn't so bad, and don't feel as motivated to try to do something
about
it.
Well, and then our fear on that is that other perception, too, which is the self-fulfilling prophecy. If government stops working or people see it as broken, they think, well, maybe we need to cut more. It's inefficient. It's doing something, and it becomes this cycle where you keep cutting, so government doesn't work right as people want to see it. And so they think, well, we've got to do something more to fix it because it's inefficient. And then it makes it more inefficient, you know. So I think there's this long-term domino effect of what you see.
The issue that I hear there is when we're talking about strategic cuts, Tim, you and I have talked about that a number of times, and your colleague, John Palguda, we've talked about the idea of analyzing the things that government does. I still am in favor of some kind of a grand inventory of what agencies do, because agencies can't even quantify specifically all of the things that they do to be able to tell Congress, here's our master list, and then you can decide on a strategic basis what agencies should be doing and not doing.
What they do, how they do it, mm-hmm. how well they do it. I mean, clearly all of those things ought to be part of the consideration. I think, you know, frankly, for a lot of feds, that's the concern that they have right now, is that that part is going to be missing from any of this conversation, and instead it's the axe that's going to come down. And we were talking at the break about whether or not it really in the end will be an axe, or will agencies have a little bit more opportunity to look at things and cut here and there and do a little bit more of that strategic thinking rather than simply across the board. You know, I think let's hope that we don't actually have to get there. At the same time, let's hope that agencies are doing that on an everyday basis as well, as saying, you know, how do we do this better? How do we do this more cost effective, more efficient, everything else to provide better service?
Well, I also wonder if we won't see, you know, when we get to next summer or next fall, we might see some success stories where we look back in hindsight and some agencies are able to say, yeah, we started actually thinking about this. You know, they probably will say they started to think about it in October, November, December. But the results that they will be able to show because they were doing exactly that will indicate they were probably on the case a fair amount earlier and were able to do those kinds of things that you're talking about.
And to Francis, to that point, I hope right now actually some agencies, all agencies frankly, are actually giving some of that thought. So there isn't any guidance. Nobody's supposed to be put together their plan at this point. I hope, though, simply as good managers and good leaders, that at least that's going on in your mind right now.
I can't imagine that it's not.
The what if.
Yeah.
What if. Because if that's not happening, then this whole issue becomes much more expansive than even anything that we've talked about at this point, because then it really does become ad hoc cuts with things.
But you hope that agencies are looking at it, because it's not like sequestration just came out of the blue,
first off,
and we've been under budget pressures. Agencies have had directives to cut for a while or look for efficiency. So this isn't the first, you know, clearly this could be much larger than they've looked at and broader. But agencies should have been looking at this over the last year plus.
I take some comfort in, I mentioned one of my CFO conversations a minute ago, and I take some comfort in this quote. I can read, this CFO said, I've been seeing that we're taking in 60 cents of every dollar that we're actually spending. So they do understand that if it's not January 2nd, you know, in the next 2 to 5 year period, something's really got to change, regardless of the mechanism under which that change comes. I guess that, though, kind of is part of the problem, is the mechanism is as bad or worse than the numbers that are involved. And that's what where all the uncertainty comes from, I guess.
Well, and to your point, too, about the master list, part of the problem, too, I think people forget, is that some things are appropriated by Congress. They're mandated that agencies have to do. They don't have the flexibility in the same way a private company would be to say, we don't want to do this anymore. Let's cut that program, or it's not useful anymore. You know, so there's also a play. It's not just on the agencies. There's the legislative part of it that determines some of what agencies can and can't do.
And it seems like that's where we always come back to. Mm-hmm. The second most important federal news stories of the week, selected by Jenny Mattingly and Tim McManus, both have to do with sequestration. You can read them at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by my panel of experts next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. The NIH's Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities has developed two innovative diversity training programs to get young people interested in a career in science. Ms. Fasina Lawson at the Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities explains.
One is the CURE program and the PATCH program. These programs offer financial support to help students pursue science and research studies at the college level so that it's possible for them to consider a career in science.
For more information on cancer health disparities, including research, training, and outreach to help eliminate them, visit www.cancer.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Beth Ann Telford found out 7 years ago she had brain cancer. Her doctors told her she would never run again. But now, Telford is defying the odds. The government printing office employee recently competed in the Ironman World Championship, which includes swimming, biking, and running a marathon. What motivates Telford to keep moving forward, and how did she finish the race? Federal News Radio goes behind the scenes with Telford at a recent training session. Watch the video at federalnewsradio.com. Search Ironman.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, this week selected by Jenny Mattingly and Tim McManus. And we are up to
number one.
The very top of the list for Jenny Mattingly, the New York Times story is your choice, headlined Federal Budget Limits Affect Scientific Conferences. The conference deal is not going away for the foreseeable future. And yet had an interesting conversation Wednesday night at GCN Gala with a former federal official who said this is essentially a scratch on the body of a corpse that is bleeding profusely from shotgun wounds. I mean, when you think about where we are in entitlements and so on, this is turning into a big deal. And this article gives a good argument as to why this is turning into potentially really bad policy.
Right. Well, it's one of those things. It's hard to grapple with some of those bigger issues of entitlements or other things people don't understand. Always the money, but conference spending, that's easy. You know, somebody paying X amount of money on a speaker or a video or, you know, what presents, prizes, whatever else they're doing, people get that. And so it plays really well, you know, in the media. I think it plays. And clearly there are some issues. I mean, the story and the moral of this story is agencies need to be very clear that they're spending the money for good purposes and that they vetted it through the process. And, you know, there is some story. But I think there's been such talk around this that we are seeing this story stood out because I think people get the scientific issue as well. And it picked up a lot of media play too, because what's the downside to all the cuts on conference spending? There's some valid purposes and there are reasons why federal employees go to conferences, share knowledge, and you wouldn't tell, you know, again, I go back to the private sector. You wouldn't necessarily say to the private sector folks, don't share your knowledge. Don't start doing some sort of group working on a project because we don't like the whole idea of conference spending.
Tim, we saw this with the VA conference, which was the last one, two training conferences in Florida. The part that we reported on and some of our colleagues in the government media reported on but didn't make it to the mainstream media was that was $6.1 million in spending, I think, but the IG was only questioning $700,000 of it. Now, that's still a lot of money, and it's not 100% of the spending was valid, but the IG report said very clearly the overall purpose and point of this conference was very valid, and the training that was offered was valuable to employees at the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's just this extraneous stuff that was overdone, but that's not the part that the average person, and I think that's not the part that the average member of Congress hears. They just hear that number and get a chance to tear into somebody.
Yeah, and I think Jenny made a good opening point, which was, you know, this is a little bit different than either the GSA scandal earlier or the VA scandal earlier. You know, the first thing that caught my attention with this, and this was going to be one of my stories today as well, was we've done a lot of work looking at why people actually come into government, why people stay in government, what are some of those drivers, and doing a lot more work, particularly in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math disciplines right now as well. And what we've heard repeatedly is that one of the most significant drivers, it doesn't matter where you are in level of experience, one of the most significant drivers for looking at the federal government is training and development. They actually see that government is a great training and development ground. This conference is, in fact, training and development. What we're talking about here in this article is training and development, in part. So that's one of the biggest drivers. The second thing is that's also one of the biggest drivers for people staying in government too. And what we've seen is that escalates for those that are in STEM disciplines. Their entire occupation is driven by you got to stay up to date, you got to be in on the latest, you got to collaborate with other partners, and basically that's what this story is about. And my fear with this to some extent is that you're going to have good people now saying, why am I going into government? Because I actually can't be part of a world-class conference where I'm going to learn from others and learn to do my trade better for government. Or they're going to be in government and say, I'm not going to be here anymore because I can go to the private sector and do this.
The story from the New York Times says representatives from agencies like the Energy Department, NASA, the National Science Foundation, and DOD regularly attend conferences to exchange findings with private organizations. Last year, 564 people from the Energy Department attended the 2011 Supercomputing Conference to meet with private groups, speak, and present new research. It details some labs that set up booths to exhibit projects. Those demonstrations initiate collaboration and consultation and so on. And then this story says next month for the 2012 Supercomputing Conference, none of the Energy Department's labs will have their own booths, and there will be 172 fewer agency employees. Now, that's still just under 400 people that will be going. But the interaction and whatever benefit they derived from that in 2011 isn't going to happen. And we don't see any evidence, at least from this article, that it's because the Energy Department decided we didn't get the benefit out of it that we should have. It's because somebody made a policy because of reaction to GSA and VA and so on.
Well, and federal government, whether it's science, whether it's, human resources, anything else, doesn't operate in a vacuum. Neither does the private sector. They cross-collaborate all the time. I think one of the Nobel Prize winners, I think I saw this on the partnerships thing, was a federal employee for physics, I believe, was what he won.
Yes.
And you have to go present your findings at conferences if you're in some of these fields. And in fact, the government funds a lot of research in science, technology, other things. So you can't stop things without a valid purpose. And that's the fear on these conference spending.
The New York Times story's headline, Federal Budget Limits Affect Scientific Conferences. And you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's Jenny Mattingly's choice as the most important federal news story of the week. Tim McManus's number one of the week is next when we wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Football is moving full speed ahead, and you won't want to miss any of the action in Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. Watch the midshipmen take on Florida Atlantic Saturday, November 3rd at 3:30 p.m., presented by Navy Mutual Aid Association. Reserve your seat today and make every game day your day in Annapolis. Call 1-800-US-4-NAVY or log on to NavySports.com. That's Navy versus Florida Atlantic Saturday, November 3rd, presented by Navy Mutual Aid Association. Navy football, full speed ahead.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Tom, you were supposed to be at the Jones hearing this morning. That bill is important to us.
I was there all morning.
Wait a second. Sally said you picked up your lab results from the doctor this morning.
I did. I got all of my lab results, asked my doctor a question, and ordered two prescription refills. But I never left the hearing.
How did you do that?
Kaiser Permanente.
Hmm.
They send lab results electronically.
Huh.
I can also email my doctor's office and order most prescription refills electronically.
No kidding.
While I was in the Senate hearing, I even made a follow-up appointment for next week at their new care center by Union Station.
Tom, you did all of that from your cell phone?
Yep, from the hearing room.
Huh.
That's why I joined Kaiser Permanente. They're probably the most electronically connected care team in the country. Plus, they have great quality and service ratings. I checked them out on the NCQA website. So relax. I never left the hearing room, and I had it all covered.
I never doubted you for a second, Tom.
Kaiser Permanente, the future of healthcare today.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
The March of Dimes and AFSEA Nova will honor women in the technology industry who are making a difference in their communities at the 12th Annual Heroines in Technology Gala, November 9th. From CEOs to entrepreneurs, these women exemplify leadership and volunteerism in their community. Proceeds from this Black Tie Awards program will benefit the March of Dimes and its fight to prevent birth defects, premature birth, and infant mortality. To learn more, visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc. This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, and it features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week, the most important story, as chosen by Tim McManus, is from the Washington Post. The headline is Federal Salary Council's Call for 35% Pay Hike Unrealistic. And I have to confess, when I saw this, not just when you chose it, but when I first saw it in the paper, my response was, duh, because given where we are, That's not even happening, phased in maybe for the next decade. But this passage, particular passage, Tim, from this story, I thought was interesting. If Mitt Romney wins, Frankie and Flo Fed can kiss goodbye any hope of getting a retroactive increase and probably any 2013 raise. With Romney, federal employees would have a boss in chief who thinks they're overpaid, including benefits, by about the same amount as the salary council says they're underpaid. And this is Joe Davidson's story in the Post. He goes on to cite information that Governor Romney has posted on his website and quotes it accurately. The concept, though, of trying to war game this in the context of the conversation that we had about sequestration a little bit ago seems to me to be not very fruitful at this point in time. Is that reasonable on my part?
Yeah, I think that is reasonable. And again, I think that the headline does say it all, and it is a little bit of a duh. You know, at a 35% rate, are you going to see that in your pocketbook in the next year? No. Are you going to see it over the next 3 years? No. Are you know, keep extending it out? But I think the broader issue to me here is the huge gap between where folks think federal employees are paid. And this conversation is not a new one. It's been going on. I think it's been exasperated by the campaign itself. But you've got a huge gap, 35% underpaid, 35% overpaid. That's a, I don't know what that is, 70% gap. I don't know, 35
It's a 70 point swing.
So clearly, one of the things that I think we have to do is get a handle on really how are federal employees paid comparable to those in other sectors. And we haven't been able to do that in a way that has satisfied anyone to this point.
I wonder if maybe this isn't a different conversation, if maybe we're having the wrong conversation. Maybe because you and I have talked on the jillion occasions about what really it takes to retain good employees and attract good employees. And your organization has done fantastic work about what really matters to people who work for the federal government. Maybe it's time for this conversation to shift from what's the comparable public-private sector to what does it take, what do we have to pay people to attract and keep them, and forget this, because this conversation will go on forever.
Yes.
And nobody will ever agree, it seems.
So, Francis, that's the exact conversation. If you were sitting right now in a corporate office, that's exactly the conversation that would happen. The conversation that you wouldn't be having is, can we pay Jenny X, should we pay Jenny X or Y, and what's government paying? We'd be actually saying, we want Jenny in this organization. What's it going to take to get her in here?
That's right.
And that market is going to change from today to tomorrow to the next day in terms of what it's going to take to get her based on a number of variables. But instead we say, here's this system that we've had for the last, umpteen dozen years that we're stuck in that says, here's what we're going to pay, and here's the type of increases, and here's how we're going to determine that. And to be honest, it doesn't matter what anybody else is paying their folks or not. This is what we're going to be paid. And it might, to your point, that might mean that we don't get the best people in. And again, we go back to the earlier story about conferences as well on the scientific side of things. Those folks that are all, on the scientific side who are very specialized, those are the folks that most surveys, most salary studies within or comparable salary studies will show. They're the ones that are on the underpaid side of things.
It might also mean, too, Jenny, that we find out that we don't have to pay them as much cash up front because they're enamored with the public service they get to perform, but there are other things that we want to do in the compensation package.
Right, and I think if you do surveys of federal employees, SEA, Senior Executives Association, did a survey several years ago of GS-14s and 15s, and overwhelmingly, the reason that they wanted to go into the SES or that they wanted to be in government was because they believed in public service. They liked what they were doing, and there have been countless surveys that have showed similar things. And so people give up, you know, big Wall Street salary or a scientific, you know. But I think a couple issues on this too is, and a lot of the federal employee groups say this, this is probably the largest I've seen the percentage pay difference that the salary councils come up with. Usually it's more like 24, 26, somewhere in the 20%. But this has been the same methodology they've used over countless administrations, both Republican and Democrat, and it hasn't been an issue before, and nobody's ever said, let's give them that full amount. There's always a smaller raise that's given. And, you know, so not saying we don't need the conversation, but maybe the conversation should be, again, what is the methodology? What are the reasons that people come into government? But this is why, too, agencies have been accepted from the general schedule or anything else to pay what they needed to get the right people in. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. The conversation, as I said, I mean, I know I've been paying attention to this particular conversation for around 5 years, and it's been going on for probably five decades before that. I mean, it seems obvious to me at this point, nobody's going to be happy with the results of any way you look at this.
Yeah, I think that probably is right. And again, I think you almost have to throw out what you have and start anew and say, what does it take? What's actually interesting to me, I actually did work in federal government for a short period of time, but it was with an accepted service agency. And by the way, we actually had pay bands. So within that really different kind of environment, and I can tell you, I actually hired people for the exact same job at different pays. Why? Because I could at that point. And I don't think I sacrificed anything by bringing somebody in at a lesser salary. I could simply get them at that point in time for that salary. So, again, I think there are folks out there that can prove you can get good talent. You don't have to overpay. You don't have to underpay necessarily to get them.
You just have to do what you have to
do. You got to do what you have to do in the market that's available.
Yes, and you can't necessarily do that within the structure that we have now. Tim McManus's most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Federal Salary Council's Call for 35% Pay Hike Unrealistic. What is realistic is that you guys are terrific. And I had a great time on this week's Federal News Countdown with Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Always great
and
to be here.
Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service. You're hanging around for a little bit,
I am,
right?
Yes.
All right. You are with me on a regular basis, and we're going to talk in just a few minutes about what is going on with STEM workers, especially in the Department of Defense. The second hour of In Depth with Francis Rose right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.